Welcome back, everyone. Moving on to our afternoon home stretch here. We'll be taking on our Groundfish Committee report. We will have a couple of motions, some few things to discuss, but I will turn it over to Chair Pappalardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Primary purpose of today is to take final action on Framework 72. We do have committee motions that we'll bring forward. I'm sure Robin will cover this in her presentation, but the GAP, the RAP, and the committee have met, and we are bringing forward, I think, five or six motions in total for the council to consider, and hopefully we get through those and submit this document and get it into the hopper. I'll turn it over to Robin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Robin Friede, Council's Groundfish Plan Coordinator. And let's see, we don't have the clicker, right?
No, it's
sure. We'll go to the next slide. So again, the total focus today for groundfish is Framework 72, which is this year's annual specifications and management measures action. So discussing the draft alternatives, draft impact analysis that's provided. We do have one of your documents is a supplemental PDT analysis on white hake projections, additional catch projections, and rebuilding projections. This was something that was a request, tasked from the Groundfish Committee at their meeting recently to bring to this council meeting, just given the timing. So we'll talk through that. And again, looking to recommend preferred alternatives and take final action. And then before we get started, just really want to thank fellow council staff who are working on groundfish. Mark Grant, we have Angelia Miller, who's doing contract work to support the groundfish plan for the council, as well as all of our groundfish PDT members, especially NOAA partners, really working to get caught up following the shutdown, and a lot of work to provide everything that was needed in order to have those SSC meetings move forward and keep this action moving forward. So really appreciate the huge effort that went into that. Next slide. So the draft scope, the scope for Framework 72. So we're now looking at fishing year 2026 through 2030 specifications, as you heard in the previous presentation from the SSC report. So looking at setting 5-year specifications just in light of the recent changes with federal resources. And so the actions here, the items included in this action are revising the status determination criteria for Georgia's Bank Yellowtail Flounder, updates from that assessment this fall, setting the fishing year 2026 total allowable catches, the TACs for the U.S.-Canada management units that you just heard from the TMGC report, the Eastern Georgia's Bank Cod and Eastern Georgia's Bank Haddock management units and Georgia's Bank Yellowtail Flounder stock, setting 1-year fishing year 2026 specifications for those three transboundary stocks, Georgia's Bank Cod, Haddock, and Yellowtail Flounder, and then setting the 5-year specifications 2026 through 2030 for the remaining yellowtail flounder stocks, Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine, and Southern New England Mid-Atlantic, the three winter flounder stocks of Georgia's Bank, Gulf of Maine, and Southern New England Mid-Atlantic, white hake, redfish, ocean pout, and wolffish, including updating a review of the subcomponent analysis for focus on the stocks here with revised specifications, and then halibut and others time permitting, and then measures that look at addressing some sort of additional some remaining measures as part of Atlantic cod management transition, the phase one, and really that's the regional administrator authority or that process to adjust recreational measures for cod and now expanded to haddock. Next slide. The timeline, so this framework was initiated by the council in June, and council received an update in September. Over that course, throughout the summer and fall, many meetings occurring, the management track assessments you just heard about, TMGC, SSC meetings, and looking at taking final action today, the goal towards May 1 implementation of this action. Next slide. So taking that scope now is a range of alternatives. In the document that you have, which we're, as council staff, PDT, trying a little bit of a different approach, we've package things together in a discussion framework, discussion document format. So it includes the draft alternatives and some of the draft impact analysis right now, bringing to you the biological and economic impacts, and then include some of the of development, the analysis that the PDT worked through. So that's one of the documents that you have, that framework discussion document, which includes these draft alternatives. The first action one being the updated status determination criteria for George's Lake Yellowtail Flounder. Action two, the specifications, all those items that I just walked through. And action three, recreational fishery management measures, establishing that regulatory process for the RA to adjust recreational measures for cod and haddock. Next slide. And just that we'll be discussing these a little bit of a different order, sort of going from least to most complicated. So status determination criteria, then the recreational measures, and then going through the specifications. Next slide. And so action one in this kind of table format is following one of the other documents you have provided, which is a decision document to kind of walk through the alternatives and where the advisory panels and the committee have weighed in. So for action one, status determination criteria, and the council could select one of two alternatives here. No action would not adopt status determination criteria for George's Bay Yellowtail Flounder. Alternative two would adopt the status determination criteria as updated for George's Bay Yellowtail Flounder from the 2025 management track assessment. And the ground fish advisory panel met, they didn't have a quorum, but proceeded in a discussion format and so and did offer support or recommendation for alternative two, as did the ground fish committee at their meeting. Next slide. And so in consideration for preferred alternative recommendations today, we'd look at whether a recommendation for alternative one, no action, or alternative two, updating the status determination criteria for George's Bank Yellowtail Flounder from the 2025 management track assessment. Next slide. So action three, this is under the recreational fishery management measures. And again, we'd be selecting one of the two alternatives. So the, under the no action, would maintain the current process where the regional administrator has the authority to adjust recreational measures for stocks, only those stocks that have recreational sub-ACLs. So that's Gulf of Maine haddock. And then as proposed in Amendment 25, that would be Western Gulf of Maine cod and Southern Ringland cod. Alternative two would establish the regulatory process for the RA to adjust recreational measures for all stocks of cod and haddock. So that would also include Eastern Gulf of Maine cod and George's Bank cod, as well as George's Bank haddock, kind of folding those into that same consultation process that occurs for developing measures, recommendations for the stocks that do have recreational sub-ACLs. And this was discussed and recommended as a consensus statement by the recreational advisors to support alternative two, as well as the committee, believing that this would offer some flexibility and help streamline the process. Next slide. And so here again, looking to, for a preferred alternative for action three, either no action, maintaining the current process, or alternative two, establishing this regulatory process. This would be on a permanent basis to add or allow that authority, that process to adjust for the RA to adjust measures for all cod and haddock stocks. Next slide. And so getting into the more the meat of this framework action is action two, revised specifications. So under here, the council would select either alternative one or alternative two. And then there's also an option two that could be selected under alternative two. And so under alternative one, no action. Just note that there would be default specifications for a number of stocks that don't have specifications for fishing year 2026. And under revised specifications alternative two, all of those specifications for the 5 years, 5 year fishing years for all of those stocks, the yellowtail flounder stocks, winter flounder stocks, white hake, redfish, ocean pout, wolffish, as well as 1 year specifications for the transboundary stocks, the updated US Canada TACs, and that subcomponent analysis for several of these stocks. And then option A, this would remove the management uncertainty buffer for sectors for white hake. If the at-sea monitoring target coverage rate is set at 90% or higher for fishing year 2026 through 2030. And so as established in Amendment 23, the monitoring amendment, there's a provision that removes the sector management uncertainty buffer for allocated stocks if the target coverage is 100% or higher. So this would just set this for white hake, should that be at 90% instead of 100%. And so the groundfish advisors, they recommended alternative two revised specifications. with the exception of white hake and redfish. I'm going to walk through that the next couple of slides. The committee similarly in a similar vein recommended alternative two, but did not make a recommendation on white hake, and again had some further PDT tasking to bring forward today. The committee did had recommended and added that option for option A on the management uncertainty buffer. Next slide. And so, as mentioned, the groundfish advisors didn't have a quorum, but advisors did proceed in a discussion format. And regarding white hake and redfish, some of the advisors at the meeting supported a consideration for setting the white hake catch advice at a higher risk level for fishing year 2026 through to the next assessment, citing the stock status not being overfished and being of really high value for the fishery as a constraining stock that they're encountering, and some of these kind of differing observations from the industry relative to the assessment. There was one advisor who did not support this, and mainly that concern was around timing delays with the framework moving that through, particularly following the extended government shutdown. And then for redfish as well, similarly, some of the groundfish advisors supported consideration for setting redfish catch target at a higher risk level for 2026 fishing year through the next assessment. There's also support for considering the examination of the redfish sector exemption program, impacts of potential consideration of a suspension for that program, and what that might do for catches. Similarly, highlighting the stock status, not overfished, no overfishing, and some of the observations that the industry has seen from the stock in recent years. And then the advisor who was not in support of this, again, citing concerns around the timeline and delays for Framework 72, as well, in particular for redfish, the life history with this being a longer-lived, slower-growing species, and a concern that taking on greater risk would not be warranted here, and concern about trying to avoid getting into another rebuilding plan for the stock, which could be a pretty lengthy timeline. Next slide. Some of the relevant committee motions to walk through. The committee received the PDT subcomponent analysis and recommended all of those put forward those recommendations from the PDT for subcomponents. Generally, that's following an approach that uses most recent 3 years of catches to then make some adjustments to some of those components for the state and other subcomponents. Next slide. The committee recommended setting the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail Flounder Scallop Fishery Sub-ACL, basically holding the 2025 fishing year Sub-ACL of 2.7 metric tons constant. So this is one of the approaches, the only flatfish stock with a scallop sub-ACL that doesn't have a fixed allocation, a fixed percentage of the ABC. It's the approach has been to use the scallop PDT's projected bycatch and use 90% of that value. Given the impacts with the some of the shutdown and loss of federal resources, the scallop PDT didn't have the bycatch projections. I know you heard earlier, it looks like that is something that will be provided as part of their framework document and can be updated, but at least in terms of needing to determine the sub-ACL in the groundfish action, the groundfish PDT determined or discussed a couple of different approaches, had some discussion with the scallop PDT about expected effort relative for the stock, and then the committee recommended moving forward with just maintaining the sub-ACL. Taking up the PDT's recommendation, normally this would be set for the set the same for the entire specification cycle, but given the additional uncertainty, the PDT recommended reevaluating this in 2026 when there is updated data. And so the committee took that up as well. Next slide. The committee made a recommendation for the Cape Cod Gulf of Maine Yellowtail Flounder stock to set the ABC for all 5 years, 2026 through 2030. At the 2026 level, ABC level, 1,736 metric tons, and hold that constant. So I think hearing some of the uncertainty and the concerns that were discussed from the peer review panel and the SSC for this assessment in the stock, some of the questions around kind of the biological realism of the assessment and the large changes in scale and the projections, noting, as it was discussed earlier, the stock, at least in this terminal year, is overfished. Then is kind of resulting in these large increases in the projections, despite kind of moderate weak recruitment in recent years, these values being much higher than recent catches have been, in a sense that maintaining that ABC at that lower value, holding it through would kind of account for some of that uncertainty, but still recognizing that that is an increase in catch in some of the recent subaseals yields for the stock. Next slide. And so return to our somewhere along the line, these flow charts were introduced. Hopefully, this is a good way to kind of walk through how the draft allocations would be. These are each for fishing year 2026 for each of the stocks with updates and kind of flowing through the OFL to the ABC on the left-hand side. So for a stock like Georgia's Bank Cod here, you see where the Canadian fishery, where that catch amount is assigned, the state waters and other fisheries. So these are on the left hand, these are the subcomponents. So these are set aside for expected catches. There aren't accountability measures. There aren't any adjustments for management uncertainty. And then on the right is where you would have the allocation. So in this case, the sector and combo pool ABC and how that flows through to the sub-ACL for the commercial groundfish fishery. And so the sub-ACLs are subject to accountability measures. They do have management uncertainty buffers. And then just as a reminder, there is that provision where if the coverage target is set at 100%, that sector management buffer, the management uncertainty buffer just for the sector portion goes to zero. And so for, as you heard in the TMGC and SSC discussion for Georgia's Bank Cod, setting the OFL and ABC the same at 473 metric tons, it's accounting for this being both the ABC and the U.S.-Canada Eastern Georgia's Bank TAC, leaving has 151 metric tons for our U.S. fishery, 322 in the Canadian. This fishery or the stock doesn't have state water, so that's zeroed out. Other fisheries around 12 metric tons. And then a groundfish sub-ACL for both sector and common pool of 132.3 metric tons. Next slide. Sort of similarly for haddock in terms of another stock that's our transboundary stock here. So the OFL being set equal to the ABC, that US portion of the Eastern Georgia's Bank TAC being 998 metric tons. That's a total of 4,425 metric tons for US fisheries. See that Canadian amount there, 3,752 metric tons on the left. Also a stock where the state waters has been zero, very low. So it's zeroed out to 0 metric tons. Other fisheries would receive in 2026, 22 metric tons. Georgia's Bank Haddock does have a midwater trawl herring fishery sub-ACL. That would be 82 metric tons in 2026. And for a groundfish fishery would be 4,998 metric tons. Next slide. Sorry. Georgia's Bank Yellowtail Flounder. So not, again, our other transboundary stock, OFL, ABC equal to each other at 57 metric tons. That's ABC value is also the U.S.-Canada TAC, 31 metric tons for the U.S. fishery, 26 for the Canadian. In this case, both the state waters and other fisheries catches have been very low. So those are both zeroed out. There is a scallop sub-ACL. That's a fixed allocation. Fixed percentage of the ABCs and for 2026 would be 4.8 metric tons. There's also a small mesh for whiting and squid fishery sub-ACL. That would be 0.6 metric tons. And for the groundfish fishery, 24.5 metric tons. Next slide. So Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine yellowtail flounder, going from our OFL down through ABC, state waters assigning 17 metric tons. Other fisheries, 35 metric tons. And that gives our groundfish fishery, commercial groundfish fishery around 1,600 metric tons. Next slide. Southern Ringling Mid-Atlantic yellowtail flounder has a small amount set aside for state fisheries, 2.2 metric tons, 0.7 for the other fisheries. That scallop sub-ACL, that's set at 2.7 metric tons. And then leaving for the groundfish fishery around 28 metric tons. And the next slide to our winter flounders. So Georgia's Bank winter flounder is one of three groundfish stocks in addition to the transboundary stocks where we do include Canadian landings or catch in the assessment. So those are accounted for in the catch advice setting. And so you see the total ABC and then the Canadian catch estimate, which is a recent three-year average from the assessment of 72 metric tons to give the U.S. ABC of 1,713 metric tons. There's no state waters for this fishery. 43 metric tons would be allocated to or assigned to the other fisheries. And then commercial ground fish sub-ACL between the sectors and combo pool will be 1,620 metric tons. Next slide. Gulf of Maine winter flounder. There's a pretty robust state waters fishery, a lot of recreational efforts. That would be 96 metric tons, 8 metric tons for our other fisheries in 2026, and then around 660 metric tons for the groundfish fishery. And then next slide, southern New England mid-Atlantic winter flounder would have around 25 metric tons in state fishery, 81 for our other fisheries, and around 380 metric tons in our groundfish fishery. Next slide. So redfish, moving through redfish this year, the updating the analysis of, recommended setting aside some for the state waters. That'd be 28 metric tons, still zero for our other fisheries, and that leaves 5,355 or so metric tons for the groundfish fishery. Next slide. So skip over white hake for now because that will be coming up later. So our last of our stocks here, ocean pout, a small amount set aside for state waters in 2026 would be 0.9 metric tons, 30 metric tons for the other fishery, and leaving a groundfish fishery of around 52 metric tons. Next slide. Our Atlantic wolffish, our last stock here, there's very little state or other fisheries catch, so that's been zeroed out for both, and would be 86.5 metric tons for the groundfish fishery. Next slide. And so shown here, this is provided in the discussion document under the sort of the impact section, is comparing the sub-ACL for the commercial groundfish fishery from fishing year 2025 to what's proposed in fishing year 2026, and some of the proportional or the changes here. So some of the notable increases or decreases, around 184% increase in the Georges Bay haddock sub-ACL. Heard some discussion on that earlier. Looking at for Cape Cod Gulf of Maine yellowtail flounder would be a 98% increase. Some of the decreases, including Georges Bay yellowtail flounder on a 68% decrease, and then redfish and white hake, both around 30% decrease. You can see some of the kind of more moderate changes across winter flounder stocks, and then including some of the stocks that don't have updated specifications this cycle, but in the second year of their specifications, as previously said, they may be seeing some changes. And just to note too, with our cod stocks, we don't have comparable 2025 values. It's not shown here, but included in the document is summed across the sub-ACLs for our current cod stocks in 2025 and relative to what's proposed for 2026. That would look at a 47% increase across the stocks. It's mostly driven by an increase in Western Gulf of Maine cod and Georges Bay cod. And to say that all of these, including the alternatives, these are reflecting what has been proposed in Framework 69, and know that we are still waiting for the rule on that. Next slide. So looking at some of the changes from 2025 fishing year to what's proposed for 2026 across the other fishery sub-ACLs. So for recreational groundfish, again, for the cod stocks, aren't comparable differences to or comparisons for 2025, kind of a moderate increase for Gulf of Maine haddock. And across the scallop fishery sub-ACLs, no change for three of the stocks, but Georges Bank yellowtail flounder would be a decline of around 68%. And as was noted earlier, I think we'll be looking to add some of the information that the scallop PDT is kind of working on in terms of some of the bycatch projections. And you heard some of those kind of expected potential areas of effort and how that relates to some of these sub-ACLs here. For the midwater trawl, a large increase for Georges Bank haddock, 183%. And then our small mesh Georges Bank yellowtail flounder sub-ACL would have a decrease of around 67 metric tons. And then no change for, there's no change for southern windowpane flounder, which has the other subcomponent for the large mesh non-groundfish fisheries. Next slide. So provided along with your materials is a supplemental summary of the quota change model results. I'm really grateful that Greg Artini, who's on our PDT was able to complete a lot of this really in a short amount of time, just given the shutdown and all of the impacts. So I've pulled out kind of a few higher level figure tables to walk through, but there are additional results that you can look through and would be happy to take questions on. And so just a refresher of what the quota change model is. This is used to analyze the impacts or economic impacts of the combinations of measures on the sector portion of the groundfish fishery, which has really comprised the vast majority of the fishery in terms of revenues in recent years. And this is a Monte Carlo simulation model using a large pool of actual trip data created from a reference data set. So for this run, for this year, that's using fishing year 2024 data, and then selecting from these records for the types of trips that are most likely to occur under the new conditions and new regulatory conditions that are proposed in this action. So continue to select those, sum the quota across stocks until, or across the allocated stocks until the sub ACL would be reached for a stock either in that broad stock area, or if it's a unit stock across all of the stock areas. So being a simulation, there are assumptions, and these are noted in the quota change model summary. Some of the assumptions, because this is based on actual fishing trips, so this is assuming that stock conditions that are being predicted would be reflective of the reference data set, as well as representative of fishing practices, and that there's kind of a constant demand for groundfish. There could be some variation in that, but consistent over time, and then of seamless transfer of lease, of ACE lease quota between those who are leasing us quota within the fisheries, so are not stranding any of the lease. And so noted here, and I should say the metrics that are shown look at groundfish gross revenues predictions, total gross revenue, the operating costs, sector costs, quota costs, operating profits, and days absence. And so kind of working down, looking at fishing year 2024, the realized values relative to what was predicted, and it appears to be fairly accurate. I think some discussion in the summary about, especially in terms of revenues, how a lot of that can be influenced by the landings and kind of patterns with fish prices. And then looking at what was predicted for fishing year 2025, this would have been in framework 69. And so looking at that value of for groundfish gross revenue of around $35 million relative to the realized and predicted values 2024 that are more around $41 million. And you might recall in the discussion last year that a lot of that, really that large prediction and decline was really driven by the constraining Western Gulf of Maine stock and seeing that decline in the ABC and sector sub ACLs last year, where a vast majority of groundfish revenues are coming from the Western Gulf of Maine cod stock area. And so then working down to look at the lower half of the table here, what's being predicted for fishing year 2026. So the no action, given that there would be default specifications for a number of stocks, is predicting significant declines across revenues here. So for groundfish revenue, around $17 million. And then shown here for alternative two, there's two versions of it. So one with the sector management and certainty buffers in place, and then one where those are removed, again, that provision of if the coverage target is at some monitoring coverage target set at 100%, the sector buffer would be removed for all stocks except Southern Ringling Cod. That was a decision the council made as part of the discussions last year. And that has been the case for a couple of years now, that with the 100% coverage target, we've had the sector buffers removed. And so the difference, just looking at the groundfish gross revenues, removing the buffers, that gives around a $1.8 million increase in the groundfish gross revenues and a $2.5 million increase in the total revenues on groundfish trips. But both of those are still lower than the realized values in 2024. And you'll see in the next slide, driven by predicted declines in some of our, in revenue from some of the more constraining stocks. Next slide, please. And so this is a subset of one of the tables in the quota change model summary. So I've pulled out, these are stock-specific predictions of catch utilization and revenue, comparing the revenue prediction to what was realized in 2024. So shown here, what's predicted to be the most constraining stocks in fishing year 2026. So white hake at over 99% utilization, redfish at 96%, similar for Western Gulf of Maine cod, and Georgia's Mink cod at over 90%. And seeing some of those predicted revenue declines for white hake and Western Gulf of Maine cod for 2026 relative to 2024, just given those incoming sector sub-ACLs being lower than those in the past in 2024 and kind of not allowing that same level of catch, and where you don't see that kind of as predicted decline in revenue for redfish or Georgia's Mink cod, where those sub-ACLs for redfish is a decline, but still within kind of still above some of the levels of catch by the sector fishery. And I'll just note that there are additional pieces, there are additional tables summarizing other predictions in the quota change model summaries. Again, looking at predicted utilization and catch across all the stocks. And again, this is all these details are kind of pulled out for the alternative to option with the management uncertainty buffers removed for all stocks except Southern New England cod. There's also some revenue predictions for port level, both at the home port and trip port, as well as vessel size class, generally seeing predicted declines for 2026 relative to 2024. One exception is New Bedford seems to show higher revenues under what's predicted for 2026 versus 2024. There's also stock level landings and estimated quota costs provided as well. Next slide. And so I'll go to the next slide. Again, very appreciative for Groundfish PDT members, particularly working with our Science Center partners to pull together this information relatively quickly, including over our Thanksgiving holiday. So this was a Groundfish Committee tasking that came up for white hake to ask that the PDT provide the OFL and EBC projections that are associated with 75% FMSY for fishing year 2026 through 2030, as well as updated rebuilding projections that compare 70% FMSY and 75% FMSY using both the long-term and the short-term, more recent recruitment timeframes, and include the draft specifications that would be based on 75% FMSY for 2026 through 2030. Next slide. I should say this is a supplemental PDT memo that you have in your materials. And so just as you've all heard, stock status and rebuilding plan, stock is not overfished, overfishing is not occurring. This is based on the 2025 assessment. It is in a rebuilding plan. The F rebuild is 70% FMSY, end date of 2031. This was developed in Framework 61, and at that time was indicating that in setting this plan forward, 10-year plan of having a 87.4% ability of achieving the BMSY by that rebuilding end date. Next slide. So shown here are the updated the catch projections. And on the top is now the OFLs and EBCs, as well as the projected fishing mortality and spawning stock biomass for 75% FMSY, then compared to the bottom, which is the values under 70% FMSY, which is what the SEC had recommended as following the groundfish control rules. And so what this would result in is an increase in the ABC for 2026 of 95 metric tons. Given the stock is projected to decline, that kind of difference between the 75 and 70% FMSY becomes smaller over time. Next slide. So then the rebuilding projections that the PDT ran, these are done at an F of zero. And then, as requested, 70% and 75% FMSY, as well as FMSY. So, shown here is what's conducted under the long-term recruitment. That's 1963 through 2022. This is the recruitment time period that's used for the biological reference points and the long-term rebuilding projections. So, what's shown in the figure, these are the summarized results. They're based on the median values from the projections. Projections that are rebuilding, so crossing that red horizontal line, which is the rebuilding SSB target of 25 1,004 metric tons. Those would be resulting in at least a 50% probability of achieving that rebuilding target SSB. And so what we see is that the stock is indicated to not rebuild by 2031 under any of these options. It is suggested to rebuild by 2032 under an F of zero, and then under both 70% FMSY and 75% FMSY could both rebuild the stock by 2035. And then I know there was some discussion on this earlier, but just noting that these this long-term time series, that's the kind of remaining method for what's used in the biological reference points, the rebuilding projections. Next slide. Versus here now showing rebuilding projections, but using the short-term recruitment time series, 1995 through 2022. And again, this is representing this as a sensitivity. This is the recruitment series that's used in the short-term catch advice projection. So it's not intended to be used for the longer-term rebuilding projections. It's not consistent with the biological reference points. But what basically, if conditions were more reflective of this more recent lower recruitment, you would see rebuilding taking longer, would rebuild by now 2034 under an F of zero. And then you have to extend out to even 2040, seeing that neither 70% nor 75% FMSY achieve rebuilding in that time frame. Next slide. And so the last part here to update on is showing the comparing the specifications. So now just again on the top is 75% FMSY, 70% on the bottom, and kind of having our subcomponents with some catch assigned to our other subcomponent for the commercial groundfish sub ACL in 2026, going with using a 75% FMSY versus catch by 70% FMSY results in a 90 metric ton increase for the commercial groundfish sub ACL. Next slide. Just in our flowchart format here, to note that Whitehake is another one of our stocks where there is Canadian landings that's included in the assessment. So there is an estimate that's accounted for in the catch advice, that recent three-year average, 31 metric tons. So under 75% FMSY, that ABC at 1,457 metric tons, and then having some around 7.3 metric tons for our other fisheries. That would be a groundfish sub ACL of 1,377 metric tons. And noting that for Whitehake, as it's proposed in this action, would remove the sector management certainty buffer, the coverage target were 90% or higher. Next slide. And so just in comparison, with 70% FMSY, the US ABC, 1,362 metric tons, other fisheries around 6.8 metric tons, groundfish sub ACL of 1,287 metric tons. Next slide. And so looking for preferred alternatives on for action two revised specifications, again, alternative one would be no action, lots of default specifications for many stocks. Alternative two, all of those specifications that we've walked through, as well as the option for removing the management certainty buffer for sectors for Whitehake if the coverage target is 90% or higher. One more slide. And so again, looking for, see if there's questions on the presentation in terms of draft alternatives or draft impact analysis, the PDT analysis that was brought forward on the Whitehake projections, and again, looking to recommend preferred alternatives and take final action on Framework 72. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Reed. A lot to digest there. While people start thinking about their questions on the presentation, I do have one question for you, Robin. And I think I had talked about this at, we had talked about this at, well, you actually all talked about this at the committee about the Southern New England Yellowtail bycatch amount that was allocated to the scallop fishery. You had mentioned that I believe this was not based on the scallop projections due to the government shutdown because the scallop committee hadn't been able to do that projection component. Obviously, now we've actually the number to 36 days at sea. I would assume that's that type of information will be pulled into that reevaluation component next year when we look at that sub ACL for the scallop fishery.
Correct. That's why the Groundfish PDT had recommended that still set the sub ACL for all 5 years, but revisit next year with hopefully updated bycatch projections. And just given that there seems to be some kind of changes in the patterns of catch based on expected areas where there could be more or less scallop efforts. So recommended revisiting next year, the committee recommended that as well.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the council to Robin on the presentation. Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I have a lot of questions, but I just wanted to start off with the quota change model analysis because it's the first that we've seen this specifically. So I'm going to just start out with that. So the way that this analysis is done is alternative one, which is including the management, not excluding the management uncertainty. And option two would be excluding the management uncertainty for all stocks but Southern New England cod. So that's not exactly the same of what, you know, the Groundfish Committee has a recommendation in the document for removing the management uncertainty buffer for white hake. But we don't have, but the analysis for economic impacts is looking at management uncertainty either removed for all or removed for except Southern New England cod or removed for none. Is that, I'm just trying to understand, I'm trying to understand what I'm looking at there again.
Yes, oh, sorry.
Because it's not really the same as what we have. Because that would change when you take the management uncertainty buffer, I'm assuming with the fishing behavior that's analyzed in the model that it taking the management uncertainty buffer would modify fishing behavior for maybe multiple stocks, even though it's, yeah. So I'm curious on that.
Yeah, thank you. I'll start to answer this. And then we're really grateful that Greg Ardini actually—
Because we still have management uncertainty buffers with Western Gulf of Maine cod and Georges Bank cod, even though those are identified as highly constraining stocks, we still have management uncertainty for those stocks, correct?
So I'll take it one at a time. So first of all, I just want to make sure alternative one, that's just no action. So that's, you know, under defaults, there's two, what you have here is two versions of alternative two,
yep,
with or without the buffers across all of the allocated stocks, except for Southern New England cod. So that is basically the scenario of with the buffers is if we didn't have 100% coverage target. And then the removing the buffers would be if we did have the 100% coverage target. So we had a little bit of discussion just given the timing and kind of what number of model runs would be reasonable to try to bring and bringing forward these. I think what you're asking is what would this look like if only the coverage level was 90%, so it's not 100%, and only the buffer is removed for white hake, but not the other stocks. And I'll let Greg answer that, because I think we can, that would be something that would be followed up. I think that you could get a sense of where that would fall within this range, if that hopefully helps.
Yep, Greg Ardini, Northeast Fisheries Science Center. So your question, I didn't have time to do that model run specifically, but my guess is the number would fall somewhere in between those two values, like at 36.8 and 38.6.
Does that help? So sort of the—
It does.
Yeah.
It's not, the analysis isn't really relevant to what's in our document, because are we going to make a motion to remove management uncertainty buffer for all stocks? Or, I mean, I guess we're only looking at potentially one stock that maybe more.
So sorry, let me clarify. Hopefully it wasn't clear. The removal of the buffers already, that provision exists through Amendment 23. So that will happen if the coverage target is 100% or higher. The addition that the committee added for white hake specifically and setting that as a lower This is kind of following a model that had been done recently for whitehake and Gulf of Maine haddock, kind of in the event that the coverage target wasn't 100%, but it was close to it. It was 90, just recognizing that, you know, whitehake is constraining stock and 90% is still a pretty high coverage level. So that could still allow a little bit of flexibility. But I think what we, just to clarify, the 100%, the removal of the buffers with 100% coverage exists in the plan. This doesn't need to be added here. And we, again, kind of in the short time, felt that, this kind of provides the range, and adding or looking at what it would be if you only removed it for whitehake, since whitehake is the most constraining stock, that would likely be between these two values. You do have the other constraining stocks like Western Gulf Maine cod.
Ms. O'Dell.
Great, thank you for that explanation. I was getting confused when I was reading the document. The other question I have is the estimated quota price that's in the report. I know that wasn't in your presentation, but that's in the analysis that we received. Are those values taken from, what was the fishing year for those? Was that up to last fishing year for 2024? Just curious. I'll point out two stocks, Western Gulf of Maine cod and Georges Bank cod. Western Gulf of Maine cod is estimated for a quota price next year of 137, but I don't think it's gone below, well, it started out the year at $3, and I don't think it's gone below, like, it, you know, it's a lot higher than what the number is here. And similarly with Georges Bank cod, it's also much higher. It's not 81 cents. The lease price has actually been much, much greater. So I'm just curious what we're using. And I know we've discussed this many years in the past, but curious what years we're using for those, if those are based on old information or based on current information.
So I'll start again, but I'll turn it over to Greg to provide more. Since this is, I think this has come up in recent discussions, including last year, just some of the kind of recognition that the quota change model is taking data from a reference period, and then now you're predicting in a future year. It's not trying to predict what those quota prices would be. So I think the example last year with Georges Bank haddock, where it's sort of known that with that decline in sub ACL, you might expect lease costs where there hadn't been one. And what we had added is, or what Greg had added rather, some qualitative discussion around that and the economic impacts. This year, tried to kind of take that a little bit further in what was used, incorporated for the lease prices in the model. But I'll let Greg provide a little bit more. I pulled up a backup slide that we have here, which is what's in the summary.
Yeah, thanks, Robin, and thanks for the question. So basically, for most of these stocks, it's using the quota value, estimated quota value on inter-sector leases from fishing year 2024. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of exceptions. Whitehake is one of them. So Whitehake, for that stock, the FY 2024 value I altered in proportion to the decline in the sector sub ACL, which I believe off the top of my head, I believe it was 27%. So that 2024 value was increased by 27%. And then the other example is Redfish. And Redfish is tricky because, to my knowledge, we've never really had a quota lease market for that. So that 10 cents, it's simply a number that I came up with. It's approximately 20% of X vessel price. And so it seemed like a reasonable kind of starting point for that stock. And then for the two cod stocks, those are also tricky because we only have Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank right now. And so with the new cod stocks, those I didn't alter. I used the FY 2024 prices. But that certainly the new cod stocks presents, it's a challenge to know what the lease prices will be, once those are introduced.
Thank you for that, Greg. So, I mean, what we've experienced in the fishery, I think even, you know, like let's use like Gulf of Maine haddock at 36 cents. I hope once Framework 69 goes forward, that will change that dynamic where it may, maybe that's a little bit high, hopefully, and it will lower down once the additional quota comes into the fishery. I have no idea what redfish is going to be because we've, as you said, we've never had. But if white hake is, you know, white hake has ranged from, it started out as a dollar, right? $1.25, dollar. It's gone down to 50 cents at times when, you know, the industry is towards the end of the fishing year and potentially, isn't necessarily needed. But I mean, if it's going to be as constraining as we anticipate, it will be knowing how it's been caught in the fishery. We're thinking that it's going to be much, much larger than a dollar. It could start out at $1.50 or so. So, anyways, I just wanted to note that, you know, I know it's difficult to predict, and the behavior of the fishery is difficult to anticipate, but I'm not sure we're totally, adequately estimating what the economic impacts are going to be of some of these reductions. So anyways, we're on the constraining stocks and how that impacts the, revenue in the fishery overall. So, all right, thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Adele. Before I go to Terry, I do actually want to speak to this as a sector manager. I think for some of these stocks, you're probably spot on. I could tell you probably your Eastern Gulf of Maine cod and your Southern New England cod, I expect that to be zero. Your redfish is very overly optimistic, I would say. We do actually, there is actually a lease cost on redfish nowadays. It's less than a penny. I do anticipate it going more, but up to 10 cents, I think that's a little dramatic. Just so thoughts there. Some of these other things, what I'm trying to get at, I guess, is that perhaps in the future when you start bringing something like this together is maybe to circle up with some sector managers to get some more real realization of understanding of where we would actually see the lease price, because I've been talking about lease prices for 15 years with those that are actually paying and buying. So it's just something that you might want to consider moving forward. I have up next, Terry Alexander.
Yeah, well, I'm going to stay on the same subject because with a 30% cut in hake or whatever it is, 40% cut in hake, normally I'm a flounder boat. We don't go red fishing. So we catch a lot of hake in the course of a year. And, you know, next year with a hake cut, and I usually lease out my redfish for a penny a pound because we don't catch them because we don't go in the hard part of them. But next year, I'm going to be holding on to those redfish because I'm going to have to go up in the harder bottom to avoid hake, which I believe Jackie's $1.50 price is conservative. I believe that price is going to be more like $2 a pound for white hake next year. I don't think I've paid 91 cents for hake in 10 years. You know, towards the end of the year, you know, you get them at a discount, but for the most part, you know, they start out well over a buck, buck and a quarter. They did this year. Now they're down around 65 cents, but nobody's fishing. You know, we have caused the perfect storm on Georgia's banks so that all of the boats that fish out of New Bedford are now in the Gulf of Maine pounding on flounders and catching a few Gulf of Maine haddock. And because they have no Georgia's allocation now. And I don't envy a job because there's no way, no matter what you do, you can't be right. Right. It's a best guess at best, but as somebody who's been, I have a little 62 foot boat since 2010 in the inception of quotas. I've paid $2.2 million for quota in addition to my permits. to lease quota every year. And I will bring my checkbook in to show you if you'd like. And that lease price comes $1 million out of me and $1 million out of my crew. That comes off the top. And you think about it, in the 15 years we've been doing this, my crewman could have bought a house and paid for it. And, lease cost is huge. It's not, I don't think it's the small percentage that that shows up in the quota change model. So I have never agreed with the quota change model, no surprise. And we got to have something better to show the economic impacts that we are, what our choices make to the industry. So thank you. That wasn't a question. I'm sorry. I am sorry.
If there's a follow-up, but thank you, Terry. Any other questions from Robin?
Thanks. Just to a couple of the comments that have come up, I was just reflecting earlier, I think the June set of meetings, Greg did come to our groundfish advisories meeting and had some specific areas to look at some improvements for the quota change model. Like two topics were around trying to include intra-sector lease prices in addition to inter-sector, the other being around fish prices, I believe. So I think a little bit of some kind of forward thinking, unfortunately, some of the progress on that, probably not surprising, but with the shutdown, I think that will be kind of deferred to next year. But I can definitely see more opportunities working with having Greg and our PDT work with not only groundfish advisors, but perhaps sector managers, having some kind of discussions around talking through some of the data. Seems like it would be useful for the future. So I guess I would just wanted to mention that we've had some of these kind of efforts recently and take some of the suggestions. We'll try to include that in the future, maybe expanding out to sector managers in addition to our groundfish advisors. Seems like it could be really useful. I appreciate some of the feedback.
Thank you. Jeff Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the presentation. Robin, can you go back to the slide you had up before regarding the quota change model? It seems to be getting a lot of attention today. And, you know, I appreciate Terry's comments that, you know, it's almost impossible to get this stuff right, and particularly hard to estimate the quota lease prices. I think the top couple lines on this slide really, it does highlight that predicting quota costs can be challenging and that we've underestimated quota costs in 2024. But I look at those top two lines and think that the quota change model is doing a pretty darn good job, at least in fishing year 24, of predicting a lot of the factors that are in here. It seems like, it's pretty darn tight. So we're never going to have a perfect model, but I just want to say I appreciate the work that you put into this quota change model. I think we can always make it better, particularly with the quota lease prices. But I think it's doing a pretty good job and certainly giving us the information that we need to make decisions on setting specs for next year. So I just want to say thank you for the work on it. I think it's very helpful.
Ms. O'Dell.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Now that we're on this slide, I just had deja vu. So we are assuming in sector costs, this does not include sectors or industry paying for at-sea monitoring, correct? We're not assuming that this is assuming that at-sea monitoring will continue to get paid for, correct? Because that's another important part of this, because that most likely is going to change eventually, and understanding what that will do to the fishery is actually pretty important. And I don't know if we've ever really fully digested that or had an analysis of that. So this includes no at-sea monitoring costs, right?
Yep, that's correct. It assumes at-sea monitoring is fully subsidized. And as far as the sector costs, I think I could have labeled that column a little bit better. That's really just referring to the sector landing fees that are extracted from the sector year-end reports.
Yeah, I would just like to highlight that I agree with you that the sector marring costs is a very interesting thing that we do need to consider, but we had to pause the Amendment 23 review, and I think we can't really bring that equation in until we actually have the review to understand, because I think that was part of the review itself, is to look what the actual costs were compared to what we were presented during the Amendment 23 production. Any further questions from the council on the presentation? One more, Jackie.
Thank you. So quickly wanted to just, and thank you so much, Robin. I know after the Groundfish Committee, thank you to you and Paul and the other PDT members for putting together that supplemental analysis so quickly for us to be able to review. I just, so on slide 36, I think it was. Okay, maybe it was the slide 35. Anyways, I just wanted to have an understanding of the catch projections, as well as the, you know, the rebuilding projections. So essentially, whether we're fishing under an F of 70 or an F of 75, it is anticipated in the productivity that we have right now and the rebuilding, the targets that we're aiming for, that we will not rebuild by the timeline of 2030. And I can't remember what slide you had a description of that on.
The next slide. So yes, under the rebuilding projections, what's shown here is the long-term recruitment from the reference point projection. So that is what's used for the method used in the long-term projections, showing not rebuilding within 2031. Just for comparison, when this was looked at in when the rebuilding plan was established in Framework 61, at that time, kind of based on those conditions, it appeared that there was a under 75% FMSY, the stock could rebuild by 2025 F0 or 2028 at 75% FMSY, 50% probability. Basically, with the updated assessment, and as you heard earlier, with kind of lower, kind of no incoming recruitment, kind of continued declines in the survey, rebuilding seems to be taking longer. So even under the longer term recruitment, here is it would not be filled within 2031, even under F0.
Thank you.
Mr. Lucy, and then we will move on to motions.
Could you just go to the next slide after that one? So that's the only difference between those two is you're using the long-term recruitment from 1963 versus 1995?
Yes, the difference, this is again, considered a sensitivity using the short-term or recent recruitment, the official method. Again, this is a research question that's come up a lot as we explored in this assessment, kind of remains this inconsistency between the recruitment assumptions that are used in the long-term and short-term. But basically, if the recruitment that's what the shorter, more recent period is reflecting a period of lower recruitment, if that were to be more reflective of conditions, it takes even longer to rebuild. But as a sensitivity, since this is not consistent with the reference points projections, and as was discussed earlier, there was some exploration of alternative approaches to kind of resolve this, come up with a different method, and I think that is just perpetuated. It was still an ongoing research question, and you heard some of that from the SSC. But that's the only difference here, is just that using a different recruitment period.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lucy. Mr. Popolaro, I believe there's a couple of motions here. Maybe we could take care of some of the easier ones first.
Everybody ready? We'll wait for the motion to come up on the board. Okay, so first motion is that the council approve the Transboundary Management Guidance Committee's recommendations for U.S.-Canada total allowable catches for 2026. Eastern Georges Bank cod at a tack of 473, Eastern Georges Bank haddock tack 4750, and Georges Bank yellowtail flounder at a tack of 57 metric tons.
Is there a second to the motion? Terry Alexander.
You want a rationale?
Sure, why not?
These are the numbers.
There you go.
Take them or leave them.
To the motion on the board, questions, Ms. O'Dell.
Yeah, so I don't mean to beat a dead horse on the biomass apportionment, but we're in a crisis right now. Terry mentioned it earlier with fishing behavior and lack of quota on Georges Bank and the huge reduction we had this year just for 1 year on Georges Bank haddock. The behavior of the fishing industry for those who are fishing going into the Gulf of Maine. Thankfully, I'm fully supportive of this motion that this is going to start to make some corrections, but I can't stress the importance of really looking at the catch information and having an understanding moving forward how that's going to impact the U.S. fishery, because we're living a very difficult situation right now in the fishery. Thanks.
That is understandable. As we mentioned, this is for next year's tax, so I understand that there's concern right now, but we're hopefully that this motion will take care of some of those concerns.
That's why I'm fully supportive of it, but just identifying that we have a problem now.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions on the motion on the board from the council? To the public, any questions, comments, actually just comments on the motion on the board? In the room? Online? Back to the council. I'd like to do a show of hands on this. To the motion on the board, for those that are in favor, please raise your hand for yes. Yeah. Motion passes 17-0-0. Mr. Pappalardo.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Let's see what the next one Robin has teed up. So this was a committee motion to select as preferred alternative in section 4.1, action 1, status determination criteria, section 4.1.2, alternative 2, updated status determination criteria for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder.
This is a committee motion, does not any second. Any comments, questions on the motion to the board from the council? To the public, in the room, online, back to the council. On a show of hands, those are in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Motion passes 17-0-0. Mr. Pappalardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Up next, is action 3, recreational fishery management measures. Again, this is a committee motion. I move on behalf of the committee to select a preferred alternative in section 4.3, action 3, recreational fishery management measures, section 4.3.2, alternative 2, establish a regulatory process for the regional administrator to adjust recreational measures for cod and haddock.
So committee motion, again, no second needed. Any questions, comments on the motion on the board from the council? To the public in the room? Online? Back to the council? Seeing none, for those who are in favor of that, please raise your hand. Yes, for yes. Motion passes 17-0-0. Mr. Pappalardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next up, we have another committee motion, action two. So I'll move on behalf of the committee to select the council select as preferred alternative in section 4.2, action two, revised specifications. Section 4.2.2, alternative two, revised specifications, except for the White Hake specifications. This includes fishing year 2026 specifications for Georges Bank cod, Georges Bank haddock, and Georges yellowtail flounder. Fishing year 2026 through 2030 specifications for Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine yellowtail. As recommended by the committee to set constant. My Zoom keeps bonking out here. Sorry.
I think if you could turn around, maybe see it behind you.
You think I could do that?
No.
I can read his.
Sorry, sir.
All right. Fishing year 2026-2030 specs for Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine yellowtail, Southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail, GB winter flounder, Gulf of Maine winter flounder, Southern New England winter flounder, redfish, ocean pout, Atlantic wolffish. That's it. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm offline as well. So, okay, so this is more of a hand motion. So to the motion on the board, this is a committee motion. No second needed. Any questions or comments to the motion on our sideboards here? And you'll actually raise your real hand. None from the council. Anyone in the audience would like to speak to the motion on the board? Maybe there's someone online in the netherworld. Nope, back to the council. For those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Motion carries 17-0-0. Mr. Pappalardo.
I guess the next motion, is this motion five, Robin, from the committee?
So what we don't have, as you look at this, is a motion for White Hake, since the council committee didn't include White Hake, given that additional tasking. So I think we're expecting one today.
I believe I will turn to you, Ms. O'Dell.
So I think Robin should have a motion that I'm going to make. Okay, so thank you, Terry, for seconding my motion.
Could you read it in first?
Sure. That the council, number one, preliminarily approve a White Hake OFL ABCs for 2026-2030 as recommended by the SSC. And number two, request the SSC consider framework fishing year 2026-2030 ABCs for White Hake based on 75% FMSY, taking into consideration the council's risk policy and rebuilding plan. The council accepts any revised SSC recommendations without discussion for adoption in framework 72.
Are you still in favor?
Yeah.
Second by Terry Alexander. Rationale, Jackie?
Sure. So I have a long, many bullets for my rationale, and I'll get these to you so you guys don't have to necessarily, I'll type them out. But my rationale is the fishery indicators reveal a strong White Hake population with high availability on groundfish sector trips. White Hake is one of the most highly utilized stocks in the groundfish sector program. There's been a 96% utilization of the sector sub-ACL in recent years. White Hake is a critical component of catch on all groundfish sector trips. The stock is not overfished, and overfishing is not occurring. Recent stock assessment report for White Hake appear to be moving seasonally outside of the defined survey area. There's also notable issues with aging methodology. There's a disconnect between the short-term projections used for catch advice and long-term projections used to establish reference points that remains unresolved. For a stock that has high availability to the fishery and thus a high utilization rate, every pound of fish matters, not only specifically for white hake, but for the entire groundfish sector program. It allows more trips to be taken for other groundfish stocks. The quota change model analysis, for what we were looking at, the quota change amount analysis that's looking at even just the management uncertainty buffer of 5% included for white hake or not included for white hake has a pretty significant economic benefit to the fishery, and the additional 95 metric tons that would potentially come out of a going to the ABC control rule of 75% FMSY would also have a huge benefit to the overall fishery. Again, this isn't about white hake per se. This is about providing access to other stocks in the Gulf of Maine and throughout the white hake stock area. Thank you.
Any additional information, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, that would put a few more monkfish on the table for us. Come November when it gets windy till April, the smaller boats can't go up in the harder bottom and try to stay away from hake. So it's a lot more opportunity for guys to maybe get a trip.
We have a motion on the board. Questions, comments? Mr. Pappalardo.
Trying to understand, I understand number one. I understand the intent of number two, but I don't understand how that is going to work. Unless what this is implying is that the council holds submission of the framework until the SSC can get around to the question in number two. Is that the intent?
So in terms of timing, the way that this occurred when we did it last time for which flounder is the council selected preliminarily a number and then went back to the SSC for a recommendation for, again, to be included in a document that the council had already approved. So it's at that period of time, the SSC met pretty quickly to have a discussion on that one stock. And that was aligned well with staff. It takes time for staff now to take the council motions and do the final analysis and prepare the document and send it to the agency to start their review before they submit it to DC. So it's my understanding that the SSC could have a discussion that could happen in time for that to be included in the council submission to the agency, because that's how it occurred last time. I know everyone feels very strongly that they want to try to have the spec packages done on time in light of delays that have occurred over many years, not just this past year, but many years, through the rulemaking process. And I think I would prefer for the council to approve something preliminarily today that's available, but allow the SSC to have this additional information that was provided to us today, the supplemental information, the quota change model report, to be able to have a discussion about potentially going to 75% FMSY.
Follow up, John?
Yeah. I know we're going to have a conversation about white hake rebuilding on the priorities tomorrow. I'm going to ask again with number two, if the SSC can't get to it in time, meaning if the intention of number two is to hold submission until the SSC can get this done, um, then we're talking about a delay. I mean, I think we're probably close to a delay anyways, especially if things time out at the end of January. Like if there's another shutdown, right? Maybe we end up with a delay anyways. But my question really is it the expectation that this framework doesn't get submitted until the SSC takes up the question? Or would it be acceptable to submit with their 0.70 and then we take up the broader question under rebuilding through priorities and revisiting the rebuilding program? What's your intention?
I'm not going to make a motion tomorrow to support a review of the rebuilding plan for Whitehake. It's my intention to not delay the action, but it is my intention to have the SSC meet immediately because I think, you know, that's within our purview right now. I know we're now coming upon the holidays and it's going to be difficult to organize a meeting, and I completely respect everyone has a lot going on. But I'm trying to help the fishery here, and I'm not trying to institute a delay, but I'm trying to be mindful of the reality that we're in right now.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thanks. I did just want to be clear that an SSC meeting to make catch advice does need to be in the Federal Register notice, so that we cannot do it immediately, even if everyone was available and we have the best of intention to move forward. But just to be clear, that meeting would have to be noticed.
Mr. Pentney, then Jeff Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I mean, notwithstanding all the points of the rationale, the maker of the motion, I think the one thing that's missing here, which Jackie just touched on and John touched on, is what's the rebuilding plan? We, you know, what we have is information today that unless we go to F0, the stock is not going to rebuild under the current rebuilding plan. 2034 at best, under the current rebuilding F. And that's assuming we're somehow reverting back to the long-term recruitment. So I have a lot of concerns with the implication here that we're just going to set a more risk-prone liberal F rate for the next 5 years, and 2031 is going to roll around, and we're not going to be even close to having rebuilt. So I understand the intent, but I think we have to confront the rebuilding issue. And I think it's something the council should be, hopefully tomorrow, but I'd like to see some, if we're going to do this, I think we need to have some sort of commitment that the council's going to look at the rebuilding plan, consider some of the issues that Robin touched on in terms of short-term recruitment versus long-term recruitment. What are the implications there? And how do we get this stock to be rebuilt? Do we need to reconsider the reference points? I mean, those are all valid questions that I think could be addressed if the council undertakes to look at the rebuilding plan and potentially revise it. That's probably going to have to happen anyway. The question is whether the council takes the initiative as part of this package to commit to doing that, or the council waits until the agency does we're required under the Magnuson Act to determine if there's adequate progress being made towards rebuilding. And if not, we send a letter and require the council to take certain actions within a certain period of time to revise the rebuilding plan. The reason I'm mentioning that, I think, is if we're talking about, for 1 year, say while the council is engaged in looking at the rebuilding plan and potentially revising it, going to a slightly more liberal F rate, consistent with SSC advice, while that work is being done, that's going to be a very different circumstance when Framework 72 comes up for approval than if I'm trying to write, on the one hand, write a letter to the council saying that you're not making adequate progress and you have to do something. And at the same time, the council's proposing a more liberal F rate. That's going to put us in a very difficult position in terms of being able to approve, a 75% FMSY if we're also telling the council we're not making adequate progress. So just urge the council to take that into account, and maybe when thinking about what it wants to do for 2026, whether it's, you know, ask the SSC for catch advice under a 75% FMSY scenario for 2026, and begin looking into, some of the issues around rebuilding and why we're not seeing rebuilding progress that was expected when Framework 61 was put into place.
Thank you for that, Ms. Pentney. Jeff Smith, and then Ms. Ware.
Yeah.
Use Ted's microphone.
You want it all the way over there.
Well, I don't know. I'll talk from here. I talk loud anyway. Mr. Pentney's comments gave me a lot to think about because I originally was sort of trying to solve for John Popper-Lauder's questions about how we're going to sequence all of this. Thinking about the questions about the rebuilding program, I mean, from what I see from the projections in here, we can keep the F rate at 70%, like what's in our rebuilding program now. The stock's going to continue to go down. We're going to get to a point where we're back below the threshold for a rebuilding plan again. So whether we go at 70 or 75, from what I can see from these projections, I literally can't see the difference on the graphs between the SSB predictions between 70 and 75% FMSY. I think the bigger problem that we have is the stuff that came up in the SSC and the peer review, that we're using a couple of different recruitment stanzas. We've been, and, you know, I think we do need to revisit the rebuilding program. I think that we need to be looking at more recent recruitment for when we develop status determination criteria and rebuilding plans. I think the long-term recruitment assumptions aren't playing out. That's not why we're not getting the rebuilding that we had expected to get. And this disconnect between using one set of recruitment assumptions for catch advice and another set of recruitment assumptions for status determination criteria, I don't think it's serving us well. So, I think that we should revisit the rebuilding program. I'm supportive of having the SSC look at a number up to 75% FMSY, and I agree with the regional administrator that we should be revisiting the rebuilding program. So the only thing that I wanted to try to prevent was a delay. And so that's why I appreciated Mr. Papalardo's comments about, can we submit at 70% FMSY, and then if and when the SSC gets around to revisiting this number, perhaps we could adjust it in season. You know, that's what I was hoping to do, or maybe we can get it done in time, and that having the SSC look at it won't slow us down, and we can get this thing submitted on time, because the PDT did a great job of analyzing the difference between these two F rates. I think the SSC would have the information in front of it, and hopefully could make fairly quick business of it. So that's a mouthful. I do not want to slow down the implementation of the framework. I think we need to revisit the rebuilding program, and I am comfortable sending this motion to the SSC and having them give us advice up to 75% FMSY. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Don't forget
to turn your mic off.
Ms. Ware.
That's my mic.
Thanks. And I just want to thank Robin and the PDT. I know you guys had to work over a holiday week to get this done. So thank you. I do really appreciate it. I'm generally supportive of the intent of the motion. I think when I listened to the recording of the SSC meeting, there was discussion on 75% FMSY by the SSC. But it is kind of hard to engage in that conversation when you don't have the numbers and the projection information. So I'd be curious to kind of let the SSC continue what was, I think, kind of a a conversation that couldn't really evolve because we didn't have the information. And I also am cognizant that Whitehake is predicted to be our most constraining stock. And this is much broader than Whitehake. This is about what other groundfish stocks could be caught with an increase in Whitehake. The quagmire is the rebuilding plan. I don't know how we get out of the cycle of failed rebuilding plans for Whitehake when we have separate recruitment assumptions for our reference points and our catch projections. It's going to happen every time that we're not going to rebuild because we're making such different assumptions on recruitment. So that suggests to me that reference points need to be reviewed. My impression, and maybe I'm wrong in that, is that typically happens through stock assessments. And I don't know when we're getting a next Whitehake stock assessment at this point, right? It's probably 5 years out. So I think that leaves us in a real pickle on what to do. And I hope there's a different solution to that. But my impression, again, is that reference points are, you know, peer reviewed in the assessment process. But I'm not willing to kind of sacrifice the fishery waiting for 5 years for a new stock assessment on reference points. That doesn't seem like the right approach either. So I support the intent of this. I'm interested in the conversation on rebuilding tomorrow, but I think we're not going to solve that unless we get new, I shouldn't say new reference points, an evaluation of the current reference points. I think that's really the canary in the coal mine here. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Ware. Any more comments, questions from the council? I will go. Oh, sorry. Ms. Griffin?
Yeah, I'll start with the rebuilding part. And I think I wholeheartedly agree with Megan. You know, I was cautioning about reopening the rebuilding at the committee meeting, but I think the critical part is as long as we're including review and possible alignment of the recruitment assumptions, that is a huge issue. So that's for us to take up tomorrow. I understand, looking at what we're getting for 2026 ABC, it's basically in line with the lowest year of commercial landings, 2016, 1,325 metric tons. So I get it. This is a problem on the horizon with real implications for this unit stock. The problem I'm having, and I guess I'll say, you know, I just want to right size expectations is, you know, we really squeezed the juice on this in 2021 already. We extended the timeline for the rebuilding plan based on the needs of the fishery and the high utilization. So we've recognized that issue in the past. We're doing what we can to remove the management uncertainty buffer at even slightly lower monitoring levels, but, you know, maintaining the rationale that it's still highly monitored. But again, you know, I think the sector system and the permit banks may have more meaningful solutions at their ready to deal with whatever the quota is that's available than it pretty minimal relief that a short-term increase of 100 metric tons or less it may bring. So, you know, we're really the council, what it has, the tools available to it with the quota, we're wringing out the last drops. So I'm not, and you know, what the SSC expressed some concern about preventing overfishing at different limits than the control rule. And, you know, what our risk policy is going to bring to bear for this. I just, you know, I caution people with their expectations on it.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Out to the public in the room. Are there anyone comment? Kevin Norton.
Yeah, hi, my name's Kevin Norton. Excuse me. I mean, I support this. I didn't drive 2 hours down it just for no reason, but this is so important. You know, what this fishery has gone through this year with the problems with the haddock and the cod, I mean, it's pretty much put everyone out of business. This is just taking another choke stock. And here's a word for you, making it more chokier. You know, it's not, I mean, we can't even afford to fish as it is right now. And I don't understand what what taking a little bit more of a risk here had to help the fishery when it's still going to put it under what we need for the year. You know, this has been a really tough couple of years, one hit after another. You know, I fish in a small sector, a small community, and, you know, we're trying to keep our little sector and our fishery open. We don't have a big permit bank. You know, we don't have things like that to go to. You know, I wish we did, but we don't. You know, we have a bunch of families operating small boats that are all going bankrupt. You know, there's a lot of guys that have their boats for sale, as a lot of you must see that. You know, there's a lot of tough things here, and it's a shrunk fishery. There's only a handful of guys left. And this is just another really hurtful thing, you know, that is, and it's, and I understand a lot of it, but I take a lot of it as a hit too, with this big rush to get it done. Well, you know, Framework 69 with our gray sole and our haddock, we're still waiting for. It's 9-8 months into the fishing season. You know, our sector is at almost 90% haddock right now. We can't get any haddock, Gulf of Maine, because we're waiting on Framework 69 and we're in a big rush to do Framework 72. So maybe I don't understand the whole process, but I do understand my numbers and my sector in trying to keep a business going. And what I'm looking at is, you know, just like a failure. And I don't know whose fault it is. I'm not trying to blame people here. I don't know if it's Washington. I don't know whose fault it is. But all I'm saying is, like, this little bit of fish, just how we already, when we fish for hake right now, it's already, we lease it for a dollar, then it's the head and gut, so it's $1.40. We're lucky to get $1.50 for it. We already lose money on it. So we're already catching it for free. So all that work you do is for free anyways. You're just doing it for the other stocks. So now it basically makes, it's going to not only take the money away from the crew for doing the hake for free, but now you're going to have to tell them another 50 cents is going to come out of your flounder and your monk to pay for the hake. I mean, I don't know if you guys understand what it's like to try to run a business and explain that to your crew. But this is spiraling, and it's one stock after another stock after another stock spiraling, and there's not enough of things to work on to make it worthwhile anymore. And the things that we work on are too cheap because you've switched all the pressure to flounder now. So now you can't sell your flounder half the time for a recent price. I just looked at gray sole. It was 73 cents today. You know, the yellowtail flounder's in the 40s. I mean, I don't know if I hope you guys pay attention to all that type of stuff. I really do. But sometimes I sit and I wonder, I'm just being honest, I'm not trying to be rude, but I wonder if these people actually know what we're getting paid for fish, what we're paying for fish, and what our expenses are to go fishing, and what our crew's checks actually look like. Because I know my crew was talking on deck the other day, talking about how they used to make $100,000 a year. And now I know this year with the 1099s, they're going to be in the 20s. And I run an honest business, and I do the best I can, and I don't take a paycheck half the time. So, I mean, when the reality of that hits this council and hits the people that are making these decisions on some of this rebuilding stuff, you know, and data poor and all these words we hear over and over again, paper fish, data poor. I mean, it's hard to sit here and listen to when you're trying to run a business and you put 30 years in. So I want to thank everybody, but I want you to understand why I drive 2 hours and why I come down here and why 70 to 75 to me seems like something that everyone here should just say, oh, this fishery needs this. And there's not even a question. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Norton. Anyone else in the room speak to the motion on the board? Seeing none, I'm having computer issues, but I did see two hands before I crashed. I will go to Vito Giacalone online. Stand by, Vito. You should be good. Are you there, Vito?
Zoom crashed up here again. Are you guys still online?
No.
Okay. I'll come back to you, Vito. Ms.
How about Etri- now?
Oh, there. Sorry. There you go, Vito.
Sorry about that. Yep. Buttons keep moving around here on Zoom. We support the motion. Vito Giacalone, Northeast Seafood Coalition and GFCPF. We support the motion. And I feel like there might be, if there's an amendment that needs to be made, I don't think anybody intends to delay anything, but it looks like they've put bounds around this pretty tight. It's either 75% FMSY or 70. And that last sentence gives full deference. So there's no blank check, full deference to the SSC of something between 70 and 75. Is there a way to word that so that it takes off with the framework now? As of right now, it's the default is 70. That's what it is. And but there's room in the event when the schedule fits and the SSC can reconvene, that it's already there, that they could have an in-season adjustment. I mean, can't that be worded and just move everything out the door? That's one, just a suggestion. But I don't know how many folks realize we are down to about 30 boats. We actually did the math. We looked into we talked to the top three sectors of offshore vessels. It accounts for about 75, 80% of the fish that's being landed. It's about 30 vessels right now. I'm estimating about 800 permits are available to those 30 vessels. And people, can talk about the leasing market, but the only way you get to 96% utilization is if the leasing market is working. Is it working in their favor? No, but that's because of false scarcity. So we don't see the disconnect there between the assessment and what's going on out there. We have these huge mature sow fish that we haven't seen, sow and large, dominating the landings. Why aren't they spawning? Is or are we just not detecting it? Why are these fish being caught by, of the 30 boats, we know that less than 10 are historical PSC, historical hake fishermen, mostly from Maine, some from Boston. There's only about 10 left out of that. The other 20 are also leasing in four, five, six times more hake than what their allocations are, and they're still running short. These are people that aren't looking for hake, never caught hake. We got a big problem there. And the other science thing you have in your favor right now is Magnuson says you can't overfish. Overfishing's at the OFL. We're not saying to go there. We're only talking about this tiny gap between 75% of our control rule and the 70%. So, and it's saying you can't rebuild from here. The regional administrator suggesting the idea of revisiting the rebuilding plan while agreeing to a modest, which is this very modest, because of the economic impacts that it would have. Even 90 ton will make a big difference. I think that's another sensible way to look at it, right? Is this is a 1 year, but how do we adjust the other five is what the issue is going to be, or the other four that we have in the 5 year plan. But we support this concept, and we can't employ you more to start looking at just the common sense issues. How are we squeezing this fishery, the $7 million worth of lease extraction, $5-6 million worth of leasing, and we're not even going to reach $30 million of revenue? There's something wrong with a lot of these stock assessments. We know that. There's nothing you could do about it legally. Here we are looking for scraps. I hope we can figure out a way to make this happen. Thank you. I exceeded my time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Giacalone. Ms. Itri online.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Libby Itri, Conservation Law Foundation. CLF actually opposes this motion as written. We do acknowledge that the SSC recommendations will have an impact on the fishery, but the likelihood that white hake will not meet its rebuilding deadline of 2031 should be concerning to everybody. The SSC recommended ABCs following the control rule option for stocks in a rebuilding plan, and even those will already push spawning stock biomass further down and back into the overfish status, making any increase in catch inappropriate. If anything, the new information that the stock can't rebuild on time, even with zero fishing pressure, would suggest that the more stringent control rule option C, where the fishery is made bycatch only, is more appropriate catch advice. Magnuson requires councils to prevent overfishing and rebuild overfish stocks within the specified time frame. The white hake rebuilding plan is intended to meet those requirements, and deviation is not appropriate. Finally, As discussed, any recommendations to remand or ask the SSC to reconsider this will have a serious impact on the ability of this framework to be finalized for May 1st. Prior to the government shutdown, as folks have noted, we were already seeing significant delays in rulemaking. Since our federal partners have come back in to the office, we have heard that we should expect additional impacts as they get back up to speed. And as it was noted, we potentially will see another government shutdown at the end of January. I think it's just really a risky decision to move this motion as written forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Etri. Ben Martin's online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am really concerned about where we are on HAKE, and I understand the constraints of the timing of trying to get stuff through with government shutdown and other things. But as we've heard from numerous fishermen and others within the industry, you know, HAKE continues to be a highly utilized stock, and it's not just one segment of the fleet that's seeing it out there. You know, we're also in Maine. We're talking to lobstermen who are seeing it in their traps, inshore guys, offshore guys. There's a major gap right now in terms of what's being seen out on the water, what we're collecting for our data streams. It does feel as though we're continuously involved in these firefighting efforts to try and put out one fire after another, when ultimately it's our data streams that I really think are flawed at this point. And I don't know how we get to the root of that problem, but I do think that right now, any glimmers of hope that we can create some stability moving forward around this is probably an appropriate step to take. I would encourage the feds to try and figure out how we can do it on a timeline that works and get it on the water. I don't think it's going to make a big difference to the stock if we're at 75 or 70, but I do think it could make a big difference to our fishermen. So I appreciate the effort, and I hope we can find a path forward to make sure that HAKE does not continue to be the problem child for the entire sector system.
Thank you, Mr. Martens. Back to the council, Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page, because I keep hearing some people refer to 1 year at F75%, and the motion is 5 years. So I just, Jackie, if you could just make sure we've got the right intent here.
I think there was just folks that were misspeaking. It's 26 to 2030. And I guess tomorrow we'll be having a discussion on rebuilding, because I agree with some of the comments that Mike made as well. But yes, it's 2026 to 2030.
Thank you for that. Mr. Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I had a question for the executive director, if I could, regarding the timing question. I understand that we usually take final action on things like this in December. The council staff goes back, works it up, writes the document up, and submits it to the agency for consideration. My understanding is that generally takes a couple of months between when we take our final action here at the council and the council staff submits it to the agency. Is my understanding on that correct?
Yes, it's correct. I think I know where you're going with this, that like, why can't we do this in January and why would that cause a delay? I'm going to turn to Ms. Friede actually for some information on how the process works after this meeting, because there are pretty specific steps in this process and they all kind of have to hit a timeline in order to get the fishery open on May 1st. It feels like a long way away, but it is actually a pretty long, detailed process. So I'm just going to turn to Robin to just fill in a little bit of the detail on what those steps are and the timing of them. And
yeah, I appreciate that. I don't have an answer in my head that I'm trying to get to. I want to know, can we do this on time? I don't think the answer is yes, we can, and why can't you do it? So I just want to be clear. I'm asking because I want to understand.
I think it's, what is it you want to get done? Do you want the fishery open on May 1st? Do you want this to go to the SSC after this meeting to come back again? Because I think the answer isn't yes to all of them. I think something gets delayed somewhere, if depending on what you're looking for.
My interest is to have this document submitted to the agency so that we can have the best possible opportunity to have the fishery open on May 1 of next year. And if that sending this back to the SSC risks doing that, I'm not going to support the motion. If we can either have sense of confidence that we could get it done in time, or that if we could, as Mr. Papalardo was suggesting, submit it with the 70% FMSY for approval, and then if we can get through the process and do some, I don't know what we would do, an in-season adjustment that might add a little bit more fish after the SSC has been able to do it. But my interest is in having the fishery open on May 1 next year. Sorry if I wasn't clear.
I'm going to ask Ms. Friede to fill in some of the gaps. If this goes back to the SSC, what is the likelihood that it would be delayed past May 1?
Thanks. So I think what you're referring to is what's the timeline for between typically when you take final action in December and then the steps to move forward through the submission. So council staff works with the PDT members to continue drafting the document. We go through a preliminary submission with GARFO. We get kind of edits back and forth on that and then move forward with the final submission. Typically, we've been looking at the preliminary submission kind of in the early January range, and then with time between allowed for then GARFO to do its review, come back, give council staff time to work through edits. That's typically around a two-month process, and then seeing the final submission go forward in March. That's kind of been our understanding of kind of the latest you'd want to go to try to keep things on time for May 1. I'm sure the regional office could speak to the fact that given kind of the uncertainties and seemingly processing of actions is taking longer, I don't know if they've thought through a longer timeline needed. So my understanding is that we would sort of not be able to move forward with submitting the preliminary submission of the document until the SSC had decided or has made its decision. That's my understanding is that we wouldn't be submitting the action to GARFO with that kind of open-ended question. That's the bit of a delay. So there wouldn't be this in how it's structured wouldn't, with the council not coming back for another discussion, you don't have to wait as long as like, the next council meeting. But at least that's how I understand it, is there would be some delay until that SSC is able to meet so that we, and then there would be a little bit of time after that where we would have to revise the document so that it's, you know, written in terms of whichever option is selected. But I guess I would look to others who would just want to confirm that the understanding is correct on where would we be able to move forward. Since I just to note, this is like different than how this was considered the last time around, where this request for modification was for the next year. We weren't trying to do it within the same year. So this is definitely a different scenario here.
Thanks for that, Robin. Just a quick follow-up. Could we do the preliminary submission with 70% FMSY, and then if information came available, we could take a shot at it in the second one?
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you. I think you'd now really have to start thinking about your priority discussion tomorrow. So now we're probably losing 2 months of the year on this action, which we were hoping to finish in January, so that then we could now maybe look at Whitehake rebuilding, but along with all the other priorities. I guess this is some of the things I was trying to emphasize in my presentation yesterday morning when we started. Everything is taking somewhat longer because there's reduced capacity across our partner organizations. There is, as we know and have experienced, really harshly in this area, delays in actual rulemaking coming out of NOAA headquarters. And I completely understand that this doesn't seem like it should be that big of a thing, and I get it, but our current process, the construct of our current rules, the laws that we have to abide by, make this not an easy thing to just do quickly. So, whatever the council's purview is on this, just please bear in mind that, the more complexity we add to it, the more time it takes, the more risk there is to a delay in the fishing year. I think there may be other options that could be considered around, we passed a management flexibility action in September, and we're hoping to get that implemented next year with the ability to consider in-season adjustments based on new information. If there's a suggestion that we can increase up to 75% FMSY or a different number, if we allow our SSC a little bit of time to, look at the rebuilding plan, if we can work on that early in the year, it could even justify an emergency action to increase quota. I'm not trying to say like put your eggs in a basket and hope. I understand the intent of this motion, but I'm also just trying to remind that each time we focus on like the crisis of the day, we lose our opportunity to make improvements overall. And that's, I think, why we're so behind in our workloads around a risk policy, a new harvest control rule, which might take all of this off the table anyways. Thanks.
Ms. Griffin.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And Executive Director O'Keefe just touched on what I was starting to think about. I think my, how I'd characterize this right now is, if the SSC approved 75% FMSY, I think we have to consider this motion with the understanding that the framework could be delayed beyond May 1st. And so if we don't want that, then maybe we do need to consider an alternate process. Obviously, that's complicated because the management flexibility option isn't approved yet. But just I'll put that out there that, if people are worried about the May 1 deadline, then I don't think you should be approving this thinking that we're going to make May 1, right? You got to recognize that risk.
Last comment to Ms. O'Dell, and I will call the question.
So typically, there's correspondence I've seen in the past. We get weekly correspondence that for when frameworks are sent to, there's emails and correspondence that we get when the council submits the preliminary document to the agency and then is waiting for the agency. And then the agency responds back to the council when they actually submit the framework to, have approved it for rulemaking and are sending it to DC. That takes time. Like, I was just looking for framework 69 to see what that process was, but it's not like it happens. I don't see there as being a delay. I just don't see that as being a problem. I quite honestly feel like it's a made up problem because I just have never seen these documents going back and forth between the agency and council staff. I mean, it's a process that could go through February, March before it actually goes to DC for rulemaking. So, I mean, I really think we have time to convene the SSC to have this discussion. And if it requires some additional language to that makes people feel more comfortable, I'm happy to make a modification to the motion. But I mean, to be very honest, I can't, this is really important. And if it's not the solution, what is the solution? I mean, this is the first motion we've put up. This is our attempt at trying to solve a very complicated problem that we have right now. You know, we have a highly accountable fishery with very low amount of vessels that are fishing. What are we doing? Sorry, getting a little passionate, but I don't see the problem with the time. I don't see it. The only problem with the time is probably SSC members' availability for organizing a meeting, but I don't see this as being a problem with what the council needs to do to then submit a document, preliminary document to the agency by, middle of end of it. I mean, we're talking about like a week or two, not like months.
Thank you for that, Ms. Modell. We will find out where we go on this. To call the question, I'm going to do a roll call vote on this one. Please state yes or no when Dr. O'Keefe calls your name.
Thank you. Please say yes, no, or abstain to the question on the board. Mr. Smith.
No.
Mr. D'Angelo. Mr. Whelan?
Yes.
Mr. Alexander?
Yes.
Mr. Aristad?
No.
Ms. Braun?
Tough one, but yes.
Ms. O'Dell?
Yes.
Mr. Hansen?
Yes.
Mr. Lucy?
Yes.
Ms. O'Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Ware?
Yes.
Ms. Griffin?
Yes.
Mr. Olszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Pappalardo?
My answer is No.
Mr. Pearnock?
Yes.
Mr. Penny?
No.
Mr. Platts?
Yes.
Motion passes 12-4 with one abstention.
Well, I guess we'll see what the if there is an actual delay or not. I believe we do need something else that comes out.
Yes.
The option A component that was originally in the documents. I'll go to Ms. Griffin.
Yeah, so this is going to take up, I think it's a committee motion, isn't it? No.
It was pulled out of the committee motion, so I think this is a okay. new motion.
All right. So I would move that, I'm going to butcher the language, the council select as preferred option A, remove the management uncertainty buffer for sectors for White Hake if the at-sea monitoring target coverage rate is set at 90% or greater.
This is not a committee motion. I will need a second. Ms. Ware? Rationale, Melanie?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we already have consideration for this, but just at the 100%, you know, we're doing everything we can to deal with this very precarious position for a unit stock.
Questions, comments on the motion on the board to the council? Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I support this motion, and I am considering making a motion to amend to include Redfish as well after looking at some of those estimates from the quota change model, even though we have some concern over some of the economic figures. You know, in general, the catch of 2024 is going to equal the sub ACL for next year based on some of these numbers. And we're going to, for the first time for Redfish, for a stock that's not overfished and overfishing's not occurring, we're potentially going to be seeing at least price, an additional price on the sector program. And it would, you know, Redfish is different than White Hake. It's more of a, you know, provides other opportunities for other vessels. It's not that it's fully entangled.
Might step in here. You kind of sound like you're going into it, but you said you might.
Oh.
So are you going to make a motion to amend to include Redfish
yes.
or not? Sorry.
Yes, I would like to make a motion to amend to include Redfish in the management uncertainty buffer with White Hake.
Thank you for that.
Target rate is set at 90% or greater.
Thank you for that. Can I get a second from anyone around the table? Mr. Alexander, I think you were going to a rationale. Do you have any more to add?
No.
Okay. Thank you. To the motion on the board, questions, comments, concerns? Mr. Popolardo.
What's left? What stocks doesn't this apply to? And shouldn't we just set it at 90% for everything? No, I mean, what's special about Red Hake? I mean, not Red Hake. We already dealt with that. Redfish. It's slow growing, deep water. We have an exemption program that we're hopefully going to review. I'm not compelled by, oh, we're going to have a lease price on it, so we need to do everything we can to avoid a lease price. I've said it before, but sectors need to and can put controls in to tamp down on lease gouging. And a lease price functions as an indicator of the marketplace and the health of the resource. So I don't support adding Redfish.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So I just would like to remind the council, this is definitely beyond the priority scope for this action that was set a year ago. At this point, you know, we are hoping to get to the Redfish program review as well as the monitoring review next year. It does feel like we keep sort of tackling these things one at a time. And this is not a little bit of work. This is more work now. I mean, all of these things that get added into an action have to go through impact analysis, which, you know, now, let alone the last motion, this in alone could actually add more time to developing this action for submission. The council staff doesn't just sit around between the meeting and then a random submission date. They have to work on this and do all of the analysis and all of the writing and go back and forth with GARFO and the center and prepare these documents. Mm-hmm. I understand the intent behind some of these things. It would be really great if we could actually finish the review on monitoring and finish the review on Red Hake and then make a holistic change to our FMP if we don't think that these uncertainty buffers are needed anymore, rather than picking them apart one at a time when we don't like the assessment answers. Just leave it at that, this approach is part of the reason why we haven't been able to finish those other reviews.
Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you. So can someone tell me what the benefit of 100% monitoring, up to 100% monitoring, has been in the fishery? One of the benefits has been that it was going, one of the anticipated benefits, which we'll get to that eventually, which we've delayed the Amendment 23 review. But it was supposed to improve our assessments. It was supposed to address, if you read the EA, it was supposed to address issues with retrospective issues that were occurring in our assessment. Well, now we have up to 100% monitoring in our fisheries. And we continue to have a lot of variability that's coming out of these assessments. And I'm happy to remove this if this gives people, because White Hake is definitely our priority right now. So I'm happy to remove this if folks feel that this is something that they can't tackle right now. But we just had a very different assessment for Redfish. And we are going to, I'm trying to understand where this fishery is heading and what is occurring in this fishery. I feel there's a high level of accountability. We just don't see the results coming out on the other side for improvements in our assessments. There's still issues with our assessments, and I'm just trying to provide opportunities here to be mindful of trying to retain a fishery. So I'm happy to remove this motion. It's not, I just wanted to provide, if it's going to create a lot of additional work and a lot of additional analysis, it's going to have a concern of further delay on the action. I'm happy to remove it and discuss it at another time, but I don't know how you feel about that, Terry, if you want to remove the motion, because White Hake is really the important thing here, but we have a larger issue here. Thanks.
So would you like to withdraw your motion, Ms. O'Dell?
I'm going to withdraw my motion.
And you agree, Terry? Okay. Back to the main motion of the White Hake Management Uncertainty Buffer. Any questions, comments, concerns? Mr. Pentney.
Yeah, just a question for the maker of the motion. Is it intended to be to only apply for 1 year or all 5 years of the five-year specs?
Ms. Griffin.
Sorry, yes, all 5 years.
Further comment, questions? Seeing none, out to the public. Anyone online from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. On a show of hands, those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand and keep them up. Motion passes. Mr. Pappalardo.
I think we just got to have a motion to submit, or am I missing something?
Ms. Freedy.
Just that motion. I was wondering if it's
okay if I could just comment a little bit on the kind of expected additional work that we would be working on for impacts. So notably, the quota change model runs that you saw are with Whitehake at 70% FMSY. So we have anticipated that we would be looking at this with 75% FMSY. Just as a expectation, it's not suggesting much of a difference in predicted revenues, really between 70 and 75%, because there's influence of other constraining stocks. There has been a little bit of discussion about the, notably that'd be Western Gulf and Maine Cod, depending on timing, could maybe explore pulling in, Greg could explore pulling in 2025 fishing year information, but I just want to, versus 2024, I just wanted to kind of provide a little context there and appreciate some of the discussion that just occurred with the management uncertainty buffer. I also just wanted to clarify, I think it was heard, the Whitehake sub-ACLs that are resulting from the 70% FMSY, or I think 75% FMSY, are very much within or lower than some of the recent catches. Redfish, though, while close, the catches have still been they're within these incoming ABC levels, at least for the initial couple of years. So that's why, at least in how it's predicting the quota change model, you're not seeing as much of a predicted decline there. So just kind of to clarify some of the discussion, I think what you'll see with redfish is now the utilization is much higher, but it's relative to the sub-ACL, but it's not, at least right now, within the ABCs are within catches within the last 4 or so years. I just thought I would share that. But yes, as was noted, there will be some follow-up work that we would be preparing the document, including moving forward with the alternative potential option from the SSC, and we'll have to work through the timing of that.
Thank you, Ms. Friedan. Mr. Papalardo.
I'd like to move to submit framework adjustment 72 to GARFO as amended today.
You need a second? Barry Alexander? Rationale?
We need specs.
Good enough. So the motion on the board to the council. To the public in the room. Public online. Back to the council. Is there any opposition to this motion on the board? Any abstentions? The motion will pass with consent with one abstention from the agency. Mr. Papalardo.
Robin, how are we looking?
That's all.
We're going to close this chapter.
Hopefully. Thank you all for another. Oh, sorry, Terry.
Yeah, just so you don't think I'm full of bull. Since we had that conversation with Greg about, I've got two right of first refusals going out of our sector. One of them for 12,000 pounds of Gulf of Maine haddock to go for 65 cents, and one of them for 1,000 pounds of Georges Bank West codfish going out for 250. So those are actual numbers that are going out of our sector this afternoon. So
thank you, Tarek, for nice lease price information.
Yeah.
We could talk about it later. Thank you all today. We'll be rejoining the council tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock when we talk about our holistic strategic plan initiative. Thank you very much.
Monday.